All right, I think I'll start. So let me say some words about A-brains, and these were going to be the last words I'll say about A-brains. So the way I'm presenting the Higgs bundle story, it will be most immediately relevant to description of B-brains on some non-compact collabials. But sometimes a version of that story is actually useful for describing A-brains, and I want to give you a little bit of that. I only have one example, but I think it's actually interesting. So. Okay, so here is something that probably everybody knows. So if you have a smooth collabial and a smooth compact special Lagrangian in it, if you look at configurations of n tuples of A brains wrapping that M, I want to claim that those are classically described. Oh, by the way, this is a joint work that I did with Bobby Acharya and Ron. So I want to say that these are classically described. By a complex flat connection on M, by a rank N complex flat connection. And it's not an unusual statement. I think many people have made that statement before. The way we got into it is by trying to satisfy the target space supersymmetry condition. And the idea is that, so the idea here was linearize x near M. As you'll see, I'll be doing that many, many times, linearizing collabials near some supports of brains. So linearize x near M, symplectically in this case, so replace x by its symplectic linearization, which is the cotangent bundle of M. Now, this is again a collabial, a non-compact one. And if you have a Young-Mills field on that, which is something that satisfies the supersymmetry constraint, you can do a dimensional reduction for that Young-Mills field to get down to M. So do a Kaluza-Kwai reduction of rank N Young-Mills field on this. Well, a priori, you have to start actually with a Young-Mills field on X, or probably even on the 10-dimensional space, and do the Kaluza-Kwai reduction. But the problem is, we don't know how to do the Kaluza-Kwai reduction unless we have some way to project X down to M. So we need some kind of a transversal foliation of M in X in order to do the reduction. And that's the stupidest way to create the transversal foliation, to just linearize the collabial and keep only the first order information about it. So do the reduction. I just mean dimensional reduction. Sorry? Dimensional reduction, yeah. Is that the wrong terminology? Yeah, but it's the fibers are groups. So I can still do a group quotient. Yeah, so there is a problem, of course, with dimensional reduction. You know, if you want to do dimensional reduction along the leaves of a foliation, you really need the leaves of the foliation to be compact in order for the reduction to make good sense. But when the fibers are actually grouped, when the leaves of the foliation are groups, you can average. So that still works. So the answer is, of course, something that many people have written before. So we get an A and a phi, so that A is a rank n UN connection. I mean, UN connection on M. Phi is a section on M in the adjoint bundle of that connection on a bundle, complex bundle, let's call it V on M. So it's a section with coefficients 1 forms, so it really looks like a Higgs field. There is a reality condition that you need to impose. So A preserves a UN connection, that's the reality condition on A, and here you need the reality condition to be that the complex conjugate of phi is minus phi, where here the adjoint is taken with respect to the metric that A preserves. Okay, so you get these two things, and they satisfy, as usual, two equations. So there is an F-flatness condition, which says that phi is horizontal with respect to A, and that the curvature of A is phi wedge phi. Did I get my signs right? I need a minus here. I mean, the normalization is kind of important. And there is also the D-flatness condition, which says that the Hochstar of phi is also horizontal. OK, now, so this is the usual story. But now I want to argue that this is the same as a rank n complex flat connection on M. So now note that if you take capital A to be A plus the imaginary unit times phi, the F-flatness condition immediately tells you that capital A is flat. So capital A is just a way of organizing these two guys, little a and phi. And the F-flatness condition implies that it's flat. And in fact, it's equivalent to it being flat. So how about the D-flatness? So if we're saying that the brain, the configuration of brains, which is described by those two guys, really is encoded in the capital A, why is this condition satisfied? And so the way this is usually written, which has always been very puzzling to me, is that we take phi to be zero. If you take phi to be zero, of course, this connection preserves a Hermitian metric, so we get a special Lagrangian with a flat Hermitian connection, and this condition is automatically satisfied. We get a typical object in the Foucault category. But there is nothing in this picture that tells you that phi should be zero, so you should be looking a priori on all solutions of this, at all solutions of these equations. And what I'm saying is that there are more solutions. They are all complex flat connections. And of course, this is something you expect, because from mirror symmetry, you do expect the moduli space of configurations of M brains wrapping M to be a complex manifold. If you forget about the phi, there is no way in rank bigger than 1 that it's going to be a complex manifold. So this really, you know, so the, in rank 1, of course, everybody writes the phi, but it's interpreted as the deformation of the special Lagrangian, right? There is always, in rank 1, when people talk about just one brain wrapping M, people say, okay, there is a flat U1 field on M, plus also there is the deformation modulus for the special Lagrangian, so you can complexify, add the two and complexify them. In higher rank, of course, the deformation modulus for the special Lagrangian are too few. in order to give you the complexification. So you need something like that. And so I guess the only thing that I'm saying here, which is kind of also known, is that the F-flatness essentially implies the D-flatness. So now, conversely, if A is a complex flat connection, I'm gonna make it very precise. Just wait a second. Yeah, the D-flatness is a stability condition, so you have to put a condition on the connection, but I'm just gonna say what it is. It's a very mild condition. Okay, so if A is a complex flat connection, then given, so A a priori is not quite the little a and the phi, right? Because if you have a complex flat connection, you need to have a way of breaking it into a real and imaginary part. And there are many ways to do that. You have to specify something like a real structure. So the data that you can actually prescribe in order to do that is a metric on the bundle. So if A is a complex flat connection and H is any Hermitian metric, on V, then you can break A as capital A plus imaginary unit times phi, where the little a plus imaginary unit times phi, where the little a is just the piece of the capital A that preserves the metric. So really, the problem is if you start with a complex flat connection, if you want to satisfy, to check whether the D-flatness equation is satisfied, what you need to do is first choose a breaking, which means choose a metric, and then the D-flatness equation actually becomes an equation on the metric, on the space of all metrics. So D-flatness is an equation on H. And once you say it this way, one can immediately recognize here Kevin Courlet's thesis. So the theorem is due to Courlet, and it says that, okay, so if M is a compact Riemannian manifold, and V is a complex vector bundle, then that A is a complex flat, it's a flat connection on V, then there are two results. One is an existence result, the other is uniqueness. So if A has reductive monodromy, which, by the way, it's a very simple condition. It just means that the bundle together with the connection is semi-simple. It means that if you have a horizontal subbundle, it has a complement. So if A has a reductive monodromy, then there exists a metric H on V such that D-flatness holds. So dA of star phi equals 0, where the capital A is broken into little a and small phi, and little a and phi with respect to that metric. So first, there is such a metric. And second, if VA is actually simple, in particular reductive, then H is unique. So if you start, I'm sorry, H is unique plus the little a is flat. So if you give yourself a flat unitary connection on M, and you try to say, how do I deform it to pairs and phi satisfying F flatness and D flatness? The answer is, we deform it by just keeping that metric and adding phis, which are satisfying these two equations, dA phi equals 0 and dA star phi equals 0. So harmonic phis for that metric. And these are all the answers. But
phi, which
phi is 0. Thank you. Phi, which phi is 0. Yeah. Which was my condition for a Higgs field. Right. But you can, yeah, so there are two ways in which you can view these guys. You can view them as complex flat connections, which actually is a very complex reductive flat connections, which is the same by the Riemann-Hilbert correspondence as reductive representations of the fundamental group of M. So it's very easy to describe. So near these unitary points, the moduli space just looks like reductive representations of the fundamental group of M, complex moduli space. And, or you can view it as these harmonic Higgs fields for your unitary flat connection near a unitary point. By the way, these metrics are called harmonic metrics because if you interpret them, they're really like harmonic representatives of cohomology classes. If you interpret them as a map from the universal cover of your M to the appropriate symmetric space, they're harmonic maps. They minimize an energy functional. So, sorry?
Supposing M is a three-dimensional.
Yes.
Then we're not, and we're looking at the representation of that, and then we're looking for three commuting elements. So we don't want things in non-trivial Jordan.
So you don't want these three commuting elements to land in a unipotent subgroup?
We don't want that.
You don't want that. In fact, there is a, if M was scalar, there is a much, much harder theorem which says that this correspondence also holds true without the harmonistic condition. So there is a one-to-one correspondence between Higgs fields, meaning connections A and phi satisfying the three equations, but now A is not necessarily flat, and complex flat connections, period, no condition. But it only works for Keller M's. Yeah. No, no, the connections are all on complex vector bundles.
They're all on complex vector bundles, but they're connections in both the holomorphic and
anti-holomorphic
direction.
Yes.
And what we're eventually going to produce is the connection.
No, my M is a real manifold right now.
Yeah.
So they are not homomorphic and anti-homomorphic directions.
Oh,
on M. M is a real Riemannian manifold, yeah.
No.
Yeah, it's a special Grangian manifold in a Calabi-Yau.
You just said connection? Yeah. Oh, okay.
No, no, I meant connection, complex. When I say complex, I meant non-unitary, because people typically take on a complex vector bundle a connection preserving a Hermitian map. I'm sorry, yeah, I'm No. I just a connection on a vector bundle. I mean, it's a, yeah, on a complex vector bundle. No, no, nothing homomorphic on the base here. Sorry? No, it's not Hermitian. No, it's a flat connection on a complex vector bundle. Flat connection, rank n, flat connection. No, no, that's what I mean. I mean GLN, not UN. GLNC. So it's a by a flat connection on a rank n complex vector bundle. Nothing about this connection preserving a metric. Right, including the normal guy. Including the phi. Okay, so the reason I wanted to say that is because it actually gives us some interesting insight into mirror symmetry, which is what our work was about. More questions? In this, it was used in the derivation, actually. It was used in the derivation of the two equations. Maybe, I'm sure that people have written those equations two zillion times before. So can you derive those equations without the special Lagrangian condition? Can you do the reduction without the special Grangian condition? The way we derive them is by actually writing this. It's not a question to me. I can't answer that. Oh, you mean like from the worksheet?
Well, in dimension 3, you obviously can't.
I have no idea. No, no, it's going to be non-flat only if the connection is not reductive. And actually, I don't know whether this correspondence works when the connection is not reductive. So, I mean, this Courlet theorem tells you that once you break your guy with respect to the right metric, this is zero and this is zero separately.
I mean, the equations are the equations.
The equations are the equations, yeah. Yeah, how do we find solutions is our business. Yeah, 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 no, you're right. And sometimes, in fact, there are solutions. So, for example, if your M is the real part of your Kawabiao, you can use non-abelian Hodge theory to find solutions which are not reductive. And phi wedge phi is not zero and FA is not zero. Is not zero, yeah. Yeah, so maybe one question I wanted actually to yes. Okay, I trust your bet. I mean, I have no idea. What I'm going to say in a moment is I'm going to just pipe this answer through mirror symmetry and show you that you get sensible statements that way, but which I don't know how to derive without having the phi. But again, is the mirror symmetry something about physical theories? I don't know. No, but the data is equivalent if the capital A has reductive monodrome in there. That's what I'm saying.
I say classically.
No. Classically, yeah, classically. That's really classical. Yeah, I don't know about quantum. Oh, I see. Yeah, so that's actually the question I wanted to pose. Maybe it's the same question. It's not a question. It's a question. So in order to do this equivalence here, you have to construct this harmonic map, this harmonic metric H, which is a map from the universal cover to a symmetric space, minimizing an energy functional. The question is there a quantization? Quantization of the harmonic map equation. On H, which would take into account the quantum theory, the quantum corrections there. I think if the answer is yes, which the physics seems to suggest, physics seems to suggest that there is a non-trivial deformation of these equations, then we'll get something very interesting purely mathematically, because harmonic map equations are notoriously hard to solve. So if you have a way to deform them, if you have some natural flaw on them, then we'll get our hands on something. Well, first you have to find this one. I see no natural quantization of this one. So. By the way we got into this business is because we were doing something in M theory with G2 manifolds, and this is the 2A dual of that. It's particularly interesting when. A particularly interesting case is when M is actually a hyperbolic tree manifold, because this freezes some moduli in the G2 theory. And these harmonic maps on hyperbolic manifolds have been totally ignored. I mean, nobody had ever studied them. But it seems that they have non-trivial moduli. So we played with some very basic hyperbolic examples, and it seems that these harmonic maps actually have non-trivial moduli on hyperbolic manifolds. So it I don't know what to make out of it. Also, I don't know a single example of a special Lagrangian manifold in a Calabi-Yau which is hyperbolic. So I don't know whether that fits in the picture at all. But, no. Okay, but so let me tell you what implications this has for at least one example of mirror symmetry. So we're going to look at a very basic Calabi-Yau non-compact one with a compact special Lagrangian cycle in it. So you start with a flat three-dimensional torus. The standard flat metric. I need coordinates, so let me write them. X1, X2, and X3 are the coordinates on RT. And now look at the order of the Hydro group. So D is going to be the semi-direct product of mu 2 with mu 4. So it's a dihedral group of order 8. There's two generators. Alpha squared is 1. Beta to the 4th is 1. And alpha beta alpha is beta cubed. Now, also, maybe I should say, this group has another name. It's the Heisenberg group over the field of two elements. So it maps to Z2 cross Z2 and precedes Z2. This is the center which is generated by beta squared. Okay. So now take this group and act on T. So D acts on T, and the explicit action we need, which is you can analyze, it's up to conjugation, global conjugation, the only action possible. So you have minus x1, minus x2 plus 3/4, x3 plus 1/2, and beta acts as x1 plus 1/4. Minus x2 plus 1/4, minus x3. The point of this action is it's an affine action on the torus. So in particular, it's free. So it's chosen as an affine action so that it's free. So the quotient is some flat three-manifold. So M will be the quotient of the torus by D, which is a flat three-manifold. Okay, and the Calabi-Yau we are going to look at is, of course, going to be the cotangent bundle of M. And M is going to sit inside X as the zero section. Okay. Now, if Y is the mirror of that Calabi-Yau, it's going to be a complex manifold, which is the mirror of this guy. Then the mirror symmetry, at least on the physical level, predicts that, and if you believe this statement about the configurations of n tuples of n brains wrapping M being flat connections, mirror symmetry says that complex rank N flat connections on M as a space should be isomorphic to a space of B brains on M, which are on Y, which are going to be points. So it should be isomorphic to the Hilbert scheme of M points on Y. So there is this complex space, which is isomorphic to this complex space. And that's what I would like to test. Yes, mirror symmetry is going to be T-duality. Okay? So we want to compute both sides independently and see if they match. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, so there is something strange happening when M is 1, right? Because, okay, let me talk about the left-hand side first, and you'll see that there is something very strange happening when M is 1. By the way, there is another consistency check you can do for this description of A brains when you go to the G2 story, to M theory. This has to match the moduli space of complexified G2 structures of the corresponding G2 manifold. So if you describe this space explicitly, and you can describe the moduli space of complexified G2 structure on the other side, then you can also check whether this is the right description. And that's how we started, actually, because we knew what the moduli space of the complexified G2 structure on the other side is, at least for n equals 2. And we wanted to compare it with this guy. But I'm not going to talk about that. I just want to do these two guys. Why is it threefold? Yeah. Moduli spaces of representations are also singular. There are many, many things you should be concerned about, yeah. Okay, so let's see. Moduli, this is taking too much time. Moduli of flat connections on M. What? Well, as I said, so this is just the moduli of rank n local systems on M, which is the same as homomorphisms from the fundamental group of M to GONC, module of the conjugation action of GONC, and again, you have to do this GAP quotient, so you have to take only semi-simplifications of homomorphisms or only semi-simple homomorphisms, and then the quotient makes sense. So that's the moduli space. And you also have a SLNC version, which I'll denote log n0. sometimes it's easier to check directly. I mean, the GLN space is actually the SLN space cross the C star space modules on finite groups, so it's easier to compute this one sometimes, but never mind. Okay. Now, okay, let's describe these guys. So we need to know something about the fundamental group of M, but it's not hard to do it. Notice that the center of D acts as a translation. So this was, remember, just the cyclic group of order 2 spanned by beta square, acts as a translation by a two-torsion point. On T. So you can look at your M as built into two steps. First, you can take T module at the center, and then you can move out by this Klein group, this one, which is the quotient of the Hydro group by the center. Okay? So this. It's also a torus, but slightly different torus, so I'm going to denote it by boldface T. Okay? So M as a manifold is really the quotient of a torus by the Klein group, but we wrote it as a quotient of a torus by the dihedral group because this is how it comes to you. I mean, it really comes to you from the G2 story with the dihedral group. Okay. Now, mess. I don't know whether that's illuminating at all. So the fundamental group of M maps onto the Klein group because I have this torus covering M as an unramified cover with Galois group K. And the kernel is the fundamental group of this torus boldface T. So this is Z3. And this is the Klein group. And you can write that group with generators and relations. I don't know whether I should write it down. Yeah, probably not. And it's in the notes, so if you want to look it up, you can look it up in the notes. So write. So writing by one of them by generators and relations. Can compute log n for all n. And the answers are pretty complicated combinatorial constructs, but let me just give you two examples, n equals 1 and n equals 2. So for n equals 1, we get that log 1 of n, m, is 16 isolated points. And for n equals 2, we get that log 2 of m has 4 connected components. 3 of them are points. And one of them is a one-dimensional complex component, which is a trident. So this is 3 copies of C that are glued at the origin. Trident. I don't know how to call it. I don't want to call it a vertex because it's not planar. In fact, you know, this thing naturally, you know, it has a real point. I mean, again, if you match it with the G2 story, each C is broken into a real and imaginary part. The imaginary part is the C field, the real part is the G2 structures. And as a trident, you know, the real part as a trident just looks as the 3 coordinate axes in R3. What? Oh, well. Okay, so you can see why Ezra was concerned here, because on the other side we have a Calabi-Yau, the Hilbert scheme of 1 point on a Calabi-Yau better be three-dimensional, and here we get 16 points. But the problem is, of course, that on the other side we don't have a Calabi-Yau, we have a gerbil over a Calabi-Yau. So, okay, so let's do cube n of y. Okay, of course, the main problem here is to identify what y is. Understand what this mirror is. And of course, we're going to be doing key duality in order to understand it. So from the key duality point of view, remember, X was the total space of the cotangent bundle of M, which is the same, by the way, as the total space of the cotangent bundle of any of the tori. So it's the total space of the cotangent bundle of T modulo K, or the total space of the cotangent bundle of the first torus we started with, modulo D. Now, this has a very natural special Lagrangian torus vibration. So X maps by P to the total space. So maybe I should say it this way. The cotangent bundle of T maps to the cotangent fiber at the origin, because T is a torus, it's a group, the cotangent bundle is a product. So I can just project on the fiber at the origin. And then by quotienting, I get the cotangent bundle to M, which is going to map to the fiber of the cotangent bundle of T at the origin, modulo D. And this is, of course, the same as the fiber of the cotangent bundle of the boldface T torus, modulo K. In fact, the center of the acts trivially on this space. Because remember, the center was acting by a translation, so on forms it acts trivially. These are constant forms on the torus. But this is the action of D on the, right. I mean, this map is you're mapping a point to its translation invariant form. And so the projection is preserved by the action of D. It just acts non-trivially on the fibers. So, I mean, the D acts affinely on the torus, but on the fiber of the cotangent bundle, it's just the linearization, the linear part of the action. Because it's just pulling back forms.
So you could also say, could be the
potential
bundle is a product.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes,
yes, which is the affine action on T and the linearization of that affine action on T star, 0. Right, so let me call this B. And do I have a name for this map? Pi. So this was our X. So we have this pi from X to B, which is a special Lagrangian torus vibration. So the generic fibers by torus. And let me draw you a picture. Maybe I should draw it here. So here is this B. Here is X. So this tori degenerate along a discriminant locus, which again looks like a trident. This is three-dimensional. The general fiber here is just the torus T. over a point which is not in the discriminant, it's just the torus T. These rays in the trident are actually labeled by the cyclic subgroups of K. So this is, say, so if I write K, I don't know, as A, B, and 1, so this is labeled by A, this by B, and this by AB. These are just the stabilizers of the corresponding points in the cotangent bundle. So over a point here, what you get is you get the torus modulo B. And here you get the torus modulo A and the torus modulo AB. And at the vertex, you get M, which was the torus modulo the whole group. And of course, these are singular fibers, even though they look smooth, because they come with multiplicities. So this comes with multiplicity 2, this comes with multiplicity 4. This is M. So it's a special Lagrangian torus vibration that degenerates, but in a very non-generic way. Usually, special Lagrangian torus vibrations degenerate so that, you know, one cycle is collapsed. Either one cycle, you know, a single cycle, but, you know, one cycle or two cycle. Here, what happens is that somehow the underlying variety is smooth, but you get multiple fibers at all points. But you have gained something that you don't have in usual degenerations in special Lagrangian torus vibrations. The discriminant locus is actually called dimension 2. In a usual degeneration of special Lagrangian torus vibration, the discriminant locus will be some ribbon graph, which is called dimension 1. Here, it's called dimension 2. So it looks really like a special Lagrangian torus vibration at the large at the large volume limit. Okay. So now we want to dualize this picture. Oh, by the way, B is singular. Exactly along the trident, along the discriminant. Yeah. As I said, I mean, just a quotient of a vector space by this action, and these are the stabilizers. But, you know, these fixed points are in co-dimension 2, so they're singular. Okay, now you want to dualize that fiber by fiber. And so T-duality well, you can try to perform the T-duality by performing so of course, you know, the real trouble with T-duality is that you don't really know what to do with the singular fibers. But if you go to the covering, which is the cotangent bundle of T, the vibration there, which is a special Lagrangian torus vibration, again, has no singular fiber, so there you can certainly do T-duality, and then you can try to model out by a dual action of D. So do T-duality on the cotangent bundle of T plus divide the result by D. Okay, well, the T dual of the cotangent bundle of T is, well, the cotangent bundle of T is the product, as I said, of T with the fiber at the origin. So the T dual is just the T dual torus cross, again, the fiber of the cotangent bundle to T at the origin. Right, this part you don't have to change. And this is the moduli of U1 flat connections on T. So it's the dual three-dimensional torus. Okay. Now, the T dual of X should be this thing modded by D. And of course, now you want this as a complex manifold. It's not hard to describe the complex structure here. This is just C star cubed as a complex manifold. So as a complex manifold, manifold in quotes, T dual cross T zero star, oh no, in quotes here we don't need. This is just C star cubed. And D acts by alpha acting on lambda 1, lambda 2, lambda 3 by inverting the first two. And beta acts on lambda 1, lambda 2, lambda 3 by inverting the first and the third. So in particular, the translation part is trivial. But of course, you compute that, but how do you compute it? Because you need the action of D on the rank 1 local system, which is a pullback action, so the translation acts trivially. So this group D acts non-effectively on this space. Every point has stabilizer Z mod 2. So the quotient is not really a space. It's a jerk. So I'll take Y to be the stack quotient of C star cubed modulo D. And this is a Z mod 2 gerb on the orbifold, which is again a stack C star cubed modulo K. Now you can compute Hilbert schemes. You can compute Hilbert schemes of this stack. It's a fairly simple stack, so Hilbert schemes are not very hard to compute, even though you run into trouble only already at n equals 2. But for n equals 1, you get 16 points. Yeah, jerks tend to not have points. So there are 16 points on this jerk, which are actually all supported as space points at the origin. So there are 16 jerby points supported at the origin. And it's very technical. I mean, the way you would think about it is you would think about points on this as zero-dimensional subschemes on C star cubed with a D action. But you would want D to act with tautological central character, right? When you specify what the action is, you have to say how the center acts. And there are two characters of the center, the trivial and the non-trivial one. You have to take the non-trivial one. So then you compute it. Most points get killed, exactly. But I wanted to bring this to Higgs bundles. So I'm going to give you another interpretation of this one. So in fact, when we were starting to compute this, there was no well-defined quotes or Hilbert scheme for a stack. But then, a little bit after that, Martin Olsen and Jason Starr actually constructed the Hilbert scheme of a stack as a space. And compute the Hilbert scheme? Well, it depends how, Hilbert scheme of what order. But, you get weird stuff. If you just do Hilbert scheme of points, you get just the two orbifold points. Because, you know, there is the non-trivial two gerb there, and it kills everything else except the two curves with complex multiplication. But for higher order, it's complicated. These Hilbert schemes quote schemes of stacks are actually extremely interesting because a priori you don't expect the Hilbert scheme or the quote scheme of stack to be a scheme. Right, you expect it to be a stack. So Angelo Vistuli a long time ago actually worked out these Hilbert stacks of stacks, but they turned out to be not very interesting in the sense that they turned out to be the natural stacks over the Hilbert scheme of the underlying moduli space. Whereas the Hilbert scheme of Olson and Starr is actually different. It's a space, and it's different from the Hilbert scheme of the underlying space. Okay, but so to bring back the you know, to do the matching and to bring back the Higgs bundles into the game, let me just say that there is one thing that physicists really like to do in such a situation. Of course, they would treat this as an orbifold compactification, which is perfectly fine. But another thing they would like to do is instead of, so there is the jerp, which you have to keep on the side, right? You have to keep this B field as part of the data. But then you have this orbifold, which as a stack is an orbifold. But you would like, one thing that you may want to do is replace this by a space. So if you take the underlying moduli space of this stack, it's singular. So what physicists like to do is to take a Krepent resolution of that moduli space and try to rewrite the whole theory, say that the mirror is going to be a Z2 jerp, not over this underlying singular space, or not on this stack, but rather on a Krepent resolution of the underlying singular space. And somehow the topological theories should be the same, right? Because we know that the derived category of the stack and the derived category of the Krepent resolution are the same by the Mackay correspondence. But what the point I'm trying to make now is that now we're trying to match moduli spaces. So the topological theory, the derived categories do not really help because you're looking now at moduli spaces of objects in those derived categories. So you have to prescribe stability. And you will get different answers depending on which Krepent resolution you take. So if, yes? Yeah, the Z2 action will be some discrete torsion, but then there are still fixed points here. So this is, you know, the underlying space is singular. So I'm trying now to replace this stack, this orbifold stack, by an actual space. Okay? So if we try to get a model for Y, which is a Z2 jerp on a Krepent resolution of C star cubed modulo K, this is the space. When I put brackets, this means the stack. When I don't put brackets, it means the space. So if I try to replace it by taking Krepent resolution, it will matter which Krepent resolution I take, because, you know, when you take a Krepent resolution, you're going to say we're doing Hilbert scheme of points on that Krepent resolution with the jerp in place. But what you're calling points depends on your stability condition. Yeah?
Sorry, I have a question. What is the image of this torsion on the side before we did mirror symmetry? Is it reflected on the
mirror action? Yeah, it was the fact that the special Lagrangian torus vibration, how do you encode it there? The special Lagrangian torus vibration on M does not have a section. It only has a two section. That's where the torsion is encoded. Yeah, it has a special Lagrangian two section only. Which was the fiber of the cotangent bundle, of course. Yeah. 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 So if we try to get this, we need to choose the right stability condition or the right Krepent resolution. If we want to get the matching, so to get that the local systems of rank N on M is the same as the Hilbert scheme on Y. So there is something very strange happening here, because a priori on the stack, you also have to choose a stability condition, right? You have to tell yourselves, what are the sheaves? What is the heart of the T structure, right? But so you can just take the geometric objects on the stack, just take the abelian category of sheaves on the stack and compute the Hilbert scheme, which is what I was doing here. So for one point I said it matches. For 2 points, we haven't actually finished the calculation, and I'm not quite sure that it matches. So there is this issue on the stack as well. I mean, it's not an issue that you can avoid in any way. You have to decide what are your physical brains, right? And I think the simplest way to decide what those are is to really choose a Krepent resolution. I mean, it could be that you're out of luck, and even if you choose a Krepent resolution, you have to work with some coherent perverse sheaves on that Krepent resolution. Right? The Degu stability that the physics dictates to you, which I don't know how to compute, may be not the natural one. Right? But I think we found, actually, the natural one exactly by using Higgs bundles. So. Yeah, you need the pi stability. Pi stability is completely insensitive to the origin of your category. Right? It works on any triangulated category. Right, so the natural guess is, well, this quotient of three-dimensional Calabi-Yau by a finite subgroup in SL3. So we have the Mackay correspondence resolution. So take the Bridgman-King-Creed resolution. The Bridgman-King-Creed resolution is also moduli space. It's the K Hilbert scheme of C star Q. So you take zero-dimensional subschemes here, which are K-equivariant and have a structure sheaf, which is the regular representation of K. That's the Krepent resolution of the Mackay correspondence. OK, so take this guy. Unfortunately, this does not work. So you compute the 16 points. And it is not equal to the Hilbert scheme of 1 point on the Z2 gerb on this resolution. Actually, here you get a 1 point, single point, yeah. It's wrong. Okay, so you need another one, and actually the Higgs bundles give you another one. This was supposed to take me 10 minutes. Now this whole thing was supposed to take me 10 minutes. Okay, so the point is that outside of the singular fibers, we really know what we're doing, right? Our Calabi-Yau or Calabi-Yau stack has to be the moduli stack of flat U1 connections on the smooth fibers. So if B in B is not in the discriminant, then the fiber XB, remember, was isomorphic to the torus bold face T, and a point in the corresponding point in M in U in Y is just a flat U1 connection on T. So I'll write it as L as a flat local system of rank 1. OK, but now notice this fiber. Remember, so we had our x, which was fibered by tori over B. But it was also a cotangent bundle, so it projects to M. Right, x was the cotangent bundle of that. Now, if you take this fiber here, which is a torus, it maps to M, 4 to 1. The map is an unramified map. So it looks exactly like a spectral cover of M sitting inside the total space of M. And you have a flat local system. And we can push forward flat local systems by flat maps, by unramified maps. So P war star of L is actually a rank 4 flat local system, local system on M. So you can interpret all those points that are coming from your own connections on this tori as just flat local systems on T, on M. And this, by the way, is giving you the matching. You have to analyze a little bit. It's not a completely arbitrary rank 4 local system. It's actually an S of 4 local system. It has a structure group S of 4. Because you have the Z2 cross Z2, I mean, the only thing that you're, what are you doing? You're starting with a representation of the fundamental group of T into U1, and you're inducing from that representation a representation of the fundamental group of M. The induced representation, because of the Z2 cross Z2, always preserves a form. Yeah, so you have this guy, and you can rewrite it by using the Corlett correspondence I talked about. So this can be rewritten as a pair, A and phi, where A is a flat S of 4 R connection, and phi is a flat Higgs field. So the only new feature that we have here is that the harmonistic condition that we had on phi now just becomes flatness condition because the underlying manifold is flat. So rather than having, homomorphic Higgs fields as the ones that I was discussing yesterday, in the homomorphic context, here you have flat Higgs fields because the underlying geometry is flat. Okay, so generically, for the smooth fibers, we really get flat Higgs fields on M. So why not take just the modular space of all flat Higgs fields on M as the mirror? Yeah, flat, so maybe I should say what this means. Phi is a section on M in at, so should I call rank 4 local system V on M. So it's a section in at V tensor A1 M. But now this has a flat structure because V is a flat local system. Also A1 M has a flat structure because the manifold is flat. So this bundle actually has a flat connection. And I'm saying the harmonicity equation on phi, which was dA phi equals 0 and dA star phi equals 0, this is actually equivalent to this being flat with respect to the product flat structure. But this is much easier to compute. It's purely topological. Okay? So the proposal is, take Y with the moduli of flat Higgs bundles on M, flat SO4 Higgs bundles. It's actually a component of that. And it is. So the only thing, of course, it is birational to what we had before. The only changes occur at the singular fibers. But you do get extra components, which you can compute explicitly. And unfortunately, we still are not able to check that this is smooth. But So the hope is that this is smooth. It, by construction, birational to the quotient C star cube module K. And we actually identified the Z2 jerk unit and computed the first Hilbert scheme, and it got 16 points. So at least the 16 points are there. Computed the first and the second. So we got the 16 points and the trident and the 3 points. Also, there is a, in fact, unique Z2 gerb on this Y, and Hilp 1 equals 16 points, and Hilp 2 equals the trident plus 3 points. So for me, this is a very strong evidence that this is the right answer. We should be able to compute, you know, prove that it's smooth, but still haven't been able to. Maybe the last remark about that I want to say is that the map from Y to B, which I'll call H, is the Hitchin map. So I wrote it as a moduli space of flat Higgs fields. On Higgs fields, maybe I didn't say that last time, but on Higgs fields, there is a natural Hitchin map which just takes the Higgs field and sends it to the coefficients of its invariant polynomial. It just forgets. So under the spectral construction, you just forget about the shift on the spectral cover, you just remember the spectral cover. And it is the Hitchin map. It naturally actually goes, so at first I was puzzled a little bit because the Hitchin map naturally goes to R4 in this case. But there is a constraint, and the image is exactly B sitting inside R4 as a hypersurface. Okay, so this is all I wanted to say about A-brains, and now I can start my talk. I have 10 minutes, I'm going to take them. Sorry. Okay, so this is the end of the story. Any questions here? I probably can't answer them, but...
Going back to yesterday,
yes.
You were wrapping up
around
a curve and a Calabi.
I want to linearize that picture.
You wanted to linearize.
Uh-huh.
Right. But that seems a little strange from a physical point of view. You replace it with totally normal stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but isn't that strange? Because shouldn't we allow the D2 ring to wander all over the Calabi Yau field?
Yeah, in principle you should, but then I don't know how to make how to make sense of this counting problem. That was my main motivation here, because I don't. If you let the curve wander around, you get just a scheme of infinite type. So how do you count? I mean, when you say that the answer is a number, you must be saying that somehow the physics picks out finitely many components of this thing, which has in principle infinitely many components, and you're just calculating the Euler characteristics of those finitely many guys. But how does it pick them out? So my proposal was that it picks them out by just looking at the linearization and deciding how they glue together, because in the linearization, these infinitely many components, they glue in clusters. You get the same component in the linearization from many of them. Again, it's probably very strange, but I'm more than happy to give it up. But of course, you know, the same method holds for non-compact collabials, which are normal, you know, which look like vector bundles over curves, right? I mean, people who do toric collabials do exactly that. They take a surface or a curve and take a total space of a vector bundle on that, which is the toric collabial, all right? Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, no, it's a curved space. And in fact, I think the right way to do it should be to actually find...
If you were doing a four cycle in a collabial,
yeah.
Would you be taking the whole linear system?
Yeah.
But that's not the same as your linear
system. The problem is it is. It is. For divisors, actually, it is. But that's not that interesting. Because for curves... So that's the difference exactly between divisors and curves. Because if you have a divisor on a collabial and it has a multiple structure, it has a unique multiple structure, right? But if you have a curve, it has infinitely many. Remember, I took a class and I was trying to wrap something on that class several times. And the issue was that just the topological information of the class does not tell me what the algebraic manifolds that I get in that class are if I'm dealing with a curve. If I'm dealing with a divisor, I just get one component. It's just the linear system of that thing. So I was trying to reconcile those two pictures by saying that, yeah, so for linear systems, it actually survives under the deformation to the normal cone. So nothing changes. It's the same, at least, you know, quantitatively, it's the same as on the compact collabial and a non-compact one. But for curves, it's different. And I was proposing it as a way out of the counting mismatch. Again, I have no evidence that that's the right thing. So. Yeah, but why would the electromagnetic duality have anything to do with linearization? But then you have to say that electromagnetic duality goes through with the linearization. Is there any reason to believe that? The linearization is some natural deformation of your collabial, compact collabial to a non-compact one. But why would why would you be able to push the electromagnetic duality in that family? Okay, now I'm gonna I'm gonna switch gears completely and talk for a while about something very formal algebraic. So as I said, what I'm trying to do now is trying to deform these homomorphic Higgs bundles as incarnations of B-brains in all possible ways, in particular non-commutatively. And in order to do that, I need to recast the spectral correspondence into a different language, which is the language of Kozul duality. So I'm going to be talking about Kozul duality for a while. Yeah, is it worth actually? Probably the only thing I can do is define an object in 5 minutes. So maybe it's not worth ending the lecture with a definition. Okay, I think I'll stop. You see, you have this derived category, which is the same. So it's the same as the derived category of the stack. It's the same as the derived category of any resolution. I mean, there is the Z2 jerb that comes along for the right, so you can ignore that for all practical purposes. I mean, it just changes your category, but, you know, it changes it on all possible models. Now, you have this category, which is the same. But out of that category, you have to pick out the actual brains, right? Not the topological ones. So you have to say which brains are actually stable. And this is what pi stability does for you, right? It tells you, among all possible objects in the derived category, these are geometric ones, or these are physical ones, right?
So
Yeah. So yeah, I'm not looking at the K theory of the underlying stack. I'm not looking at the K theory of the underlying space. I'm looking at I'm looking at the K theory of my untriangulated category. So you're saying I have to change the central charge in the definition of the bistability. Yeah. Yeah. I actually haven't thought of how to do that, but I'm actually circumventing that problem. Because what I'm doing is I'm actually giving you a T structure, which is going to be automatically be a Douglas stability for any, right? So I'm really looking at T structures, and there are many possible T structures that correspond to the different Krepman resolutions, right? Well, this is a very delicate problem, actually, of what the correct central charge is for writing pi stabilities. And in fact, there have been arguments recently, which unfortunately I haven't seen, that the usual central charge that Burgos and Bridgewater write is only correct for curves. It has to be corrected for K3s. It has to be corrected for collabials of higher dimension. So Paul Aspinwall is supposedly writing a paper explaining that. And as far as I understand, the answer is that the central charge will have to take values not in, so usually for curves, it takes values in the upper half plane. For K3s, when people compute by hand, it takes values in the plane minus the real line. So you can think about that as two copies of upper half plane, that are joined at the line. So apparently the answer in dimension n is n copies of the upper half plane joined at the line. It looks like a book. But then you have to do some very strange analytic continuation to tell you how you go from one sheet to the other, which is what apparently the physics tells you, and that's what Paul is explaining. But I haven't seen the details, so I don't know. But that ought to come, that ought to come here in this problem also. So unless, until we know exactly what function the central charge is, I can't really tell you how you modify it by a gerb. There may be some guesses, but I don't really know. No, I was just saying that there are two options of how you can try to resolve this issue with, physical brains. You can either do pi stability, or you can just give yourself a T structure. I just chose the easier option. Yeah.
Was it even obvious physically? I mean, this is something that we worked on, that the blowout modes that gave you the a corrected resolution aren't projected out of the orbital theory?
Well, not if I want to match, I'm again guided by this check that I'm trying to do. I have a completely explicit module of local systems that I have computed. I'm trying to match it with the Hilbert scheme on the other side. So you see that in one Krepman resolution it doesn't match, in the other it matches at least in, So you can still argue whether I'm having the right physical notion on the other side. Maybe there I also have to change the notion of what physical brains are, and then right? I mean, I took this model space of focal systems. Maybe I have to contract some stuff in it in order to kill brains that are not physical. So you can argue that maybe I'm having the wrong picture. That's possible. Right. You mean to say that this is the yeah. Other objections?
Thank Tony again.